Welcome to the Metal Hammer Podcast, episode 25. I'm Mo, I'm here with Luke and Elle. Just looked at you both. I was about to say, it's hot, isn't it? You look like you're melting. Are you okay?
I am melting. After last time when I was on the podcast and you made me eat my ice cream in about 5 seconds. This time I've decided not to bring an ice cream to the podcast.
Good, because it would just be cream by now, wouldn't it? It's sweltering in London, but the metal survives as always. God, that was cheesy. And speaking of which, we have just launched our very special limited edition Iron Maiden Legacy of the Beast bundles. There are only 666 of these worldwide. See what we did there?
Number of the bundle.
Yeah, thanks, Luke. Well done. And in these bundles, you will get the latest issue of Metal Hammer featuring our world-exclusive interview with the band about their unbelievable new tour, what they got planned for the future, some interesting thoughts from Steve Harris on the current state of metal and all the rest of it. Very, very good indeed. You will also get an exclusive Pharaoh Eddie patch from the Power Slave album and limited edition and very, very cool Legacy of the Beast blind box figures. If you're a massive nerd like me, you'll know what blind boxes are. You get a cool box with a mystery figure in it. You don't know which one you're going to get, but there's 12 figures available, all based on Legacy of the Beast, the game. So there's different Eddies, other characters from the Iron Maiden mythos in there as well. 12 to choose from. You get a random choice with each one. So if you want to get different ones, you're going to have to buy a few of them, aren't you? That's how it works.
Again, you can trade like the old days.
Exactly. Got need. That's what it's all about. Yeah, you won't be able to get this set anywhere else. These three items will only come with these Maiden Legacy bundles that we put together exclusively with the band. So get over to tinyurl.com/Maiden Bundle. And order yours now. There's only 666 of them, guys, so...
And a lot of them have gone.
A lot of them are gone already. They are selling. They're on sale as we speak. So if you like Maiden, trust me, as a Maiden fan of some sorts myself, you will love these. They're very, very, very cool.
Do you like Maiden?
A little bit. It's been known.
Kept it quiet.
Yeah, I've heard the cover feature's pretty damn good as well. Luke, you went to ministry.
I did.
In this heat.
It was...
How was that? I'm sweating just thinking about it.
I've never been to a hotter gig, I don't think. Well, maybe I have, but in terms of, like, it was at the Forum, which is about, what, 2,000, 2,500 people.
Yeah.
And it was just fucking rank in there by the end.
I've heard there were walkouts.
I don't know.
Really?
I was upstairs, but I did see a woman, I think it was a woman, sort of had to sit down on like the stairs and people were bringing her water, so I imagine she was not in a good way.
Jesus.
And yeah, you sort of look down from the balcony and there wasn't a smoke machine on, but it was just thick with a nice haze of sweat. But it was fucking great.
It was so hot there was literally steam coming off the...
Yeah.
Jesus.
It was hot. Like, it felt like a sauna, but it was, yeah, the best sounding gig I've been to at that venue ever. I don't know what they did, But Chelsea Wolfe, who was on first, sounded amazing.
How did Chelsea Wolfe go down with Ministry's crowd?
Well, I think it was shut down well, but it was one of those things where people were obviously up for getting Larry. Mm. Like, there was a lot, like, when Ministry came on, it got kicked off, but everyone sort of stood in like a sort of appreciative, stunned silence when she was on. And I got there just after two or three songs into a set, and she was stood there on this massive platform. She was like 8 foot tall, like towering over everyone.
Oh, cool.
Singing, yeah, and she looked fucking cool doing it. And yeah, it sounded amazing. A lot of stuff from His Spun, which is probably her best album.
Very, very.
And yeah, it went down well, but when Ministry came on, it just fucking booted off. And he came out with these, I'm sure you saw them on Instagram, these inflatable Donald Trump chickens with swastikas crossed out on them, which...
You know, subtle.
Yeah, woke.
How's Al feel about it then?
Yeah. He's on the fence. And and yeah, he did like a lot of stuff off the new record. He did 3 songs back to back from Rio Grande Blood, which is probably my favourite Ministry record, when he was on the whole I Hate George Bush vibe. And then, he sort of got towards the end of the set, it's like, well, I'm basically doing loads of 90s stuff now because that's what you're here for.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's so fucking loud though, like so loud, because it's Ministry, but it sounded like crystal clear, like it was amazing. It's probably awesome. The best Ministry show I've ever seen. Like, wow. The set list was ridiculous, even the new stuff, because I quite like the new album. But the new stuff just fit in so well with this whole, like, every song he picked was pretty much a very political one, or, I hate, the status quo type song. But yeah, everyone was so up for it and just having an amazing time. Except the security, you got a bit annoyed with Al constantly kicking the inflatable chickens into the front row and they had to keep putting it back on stage.
Amazing. Who says rock and roll is dead?
Yeah, but it was just wicked seeing Al Jourgensen. Like, he's a mess up, but yeah, he's a fucking
great. He is, but that guy's like the Terminator. Like, he just keeps going and keeps going.
Yeah.
And if you've read, if anyone wants an eye-opening book to read, whether you're a Ministry fan or not, read Al Jorgensen's autobiography. It's utterly insane.
Yeah, it's mental.
And yeah, obviously still fired up and angry as ever, which is what we want.
Yeah, yeah. You say he gave a, you know, not necessarily a shout out, but a mention of Boris Johnson and Theresa May.
Oh,
he's
wow.
keeping an eye out on what's happening over here.
He's woke.
Oh, he is. But yeah, it was fucking great. And yeah, and Chelsea Wolfe, obviously brilliant, because she is
awesome. Very, very good. Well done, Ministry.
Well done.
What a lovely roasty time.
Yeah, it was so hot though. Like, you literally everyone there was like, you know, necking pints. Me and Jonathan Seltzer from Metal Hammer were there
because of the heat.
But yeah, but you were, and you weren't getting drunk. You're just sweating it straight back out again. It was like, oh,
I don't know if I can handle that.
Elle, what's happening in the world of metal?
Well, Nightwish have written 90% of their new album.
Wow, that's like an extra 10% on what Tuomas tells us about in the latest issue.
Yeah. Well, obviously in the time between the interview and now, he's written an extra 10%.
He's not fucking about.
Well, what he says is the next album is well on its way. I've written about 80 or 90% of the material. Come on. It says all the floodgates opened last October when we finished with the Auri project. Auri project?
Ori, but I don't know.
Who knows? I was listening to the album and just something clicked in my head. I've been really excited about writing songs ever since. Oh. And he also goes on to say, even though it's 90% written, they're looking at a spring 2020 release. Lazy.
What?
That's lazy.
Nearly 2 years.
2020.
Good grief.
But so they're going to start recording next July, because I guess they've got this massive decades tour.
Yeah, they've got some stuff going on. Yeah. Headlining Bloodstock in a couple of weeks' time. That's going to be pretty damn epic.
I'm really looking forward to that. I've never seen that, I wish.
Oh my word!
Wow.
Yeah,
yeah. To be honest, I've seen them with every singer over the years, and they've just got better and better and better. Fleur is easily the best frontwoman they've
had. Oh really?
Literally, no doubt about it. She can do all the Taya stuff. She can do all the Annette stuff, and she's just a really good. She's a proper presence on stage.
Yeah.
So I don't think either of the other singers were quite so much. Yeah, I like Nightwish a lot, and I think they're. As the saying goes, the best they've ever been.
Nice.
Certainly live.
So I really got into them when the Once album came out. I remember really, really liking that album, and I just wasn't in a position to see them at that point because I was, you know, a child. And then, I just sort of didn't really follow up with it. I was like, oh, I like that album, but didn't really check out much since. But it seems like they've obviously been on a massive rise since then, and very recently.
One of the biggest bands in our world now. And I should say on that note, if you do want to hear more about the new album and what they've got planned for Bloodstock and everything else, Tuomas talks to us in the new issue of Metal Hammer. So,
oh, come on.
There's your plug. I've got a note here that says King 810 technically, isn't it?
I think it's 810, yeah. Right.
King 810 is now down to just two members.
Yeah.
David Gunn and who?
And bassist Eugene Hill are the only two members of the band remaining, apparently.
What's happened to the rest of his crew?
Well, I don't know. We saw them at Bloodstock last year and the guitarist wasn't there.
Well, I saw them more recently than that at the Underworld. That was only like 3 months ago or something. And it's the same thing. They had like... David Gunn was there and a couple of other people, and they just kind of they used synths and stuff to fill in the gaps.
Oh, that's a shame. But yeah, it's only just two members now. Yeah, and they pulled out of the Cane Hill tour in America, which obviously is not a good sign. And he said, well, the statement was, we get to inform y'all, we cannot make the upcoming Cane Hill tour. We had every intention of appearing, but I've encountered compounding obstacles. And then he basically went on to answer a load of questions from fans about what's going on. And he said, David Gunn replied to the one fan saying, we're not sorry anyone's gone, no one is missed. The fat has been trimmed, we're coming back stronger than ever without weakness. But, you know, he's not mincing his words.
I mean, where do you guys stand on King 810 now? It basically came along, were enormously hyped by, you know, the media. We bigged them up a lot at the time, and they had a big press campaign behind them. I think there was a bit of a cynical backlash towards that I don't think helped them. And since then, it seems like they just kind of had false start after false start.
I think musically, on record, it's great.
Yeah,
I really like both records. They've never blown me away live. I've only seen them, to be fair, I've only seen them twice. I've seen them at Bloodstock, and I saw them at their debut London show at Islington Academy.
Well,
to be fair, it was good, but the crowd were shit. Like, it was... Everyone was just talking over it, and it was just wound me up. Yeah,
true. I mean,
it was poetry, wasn't it? And yeah. that's the thing, if you come out the gate and you're like, we're King 810 and we have guns and we're gangsters and we have all these songs, and then half of it's poetry, kind of got to expect something.
Yeah, it was a bit of a weird thing. They had like, Dave Gunn reading those poems, and they had like weird little interpretive dance sections and stuff. Do you remember
that? I remember that at all.
And it's
like,
I think this is the kind of stuff you've got to try and bring in a bit later, because when you've got songs like, you know,
Kill 'Em All.
Yeah, so that's, I'm trying to think what the famous one was. Like, that's not what I come to a gig for. When you've got some, you're packing songs like that, I don't really want to see interpretive dancing.
Yeah.
And to be fair, by the time they went to Bloodstock, they kind of fucked off most of that.
Yeah, totally.
They were just pulling out, you know, just playing through good songs.
That's the thing. The set list at Bloodstock was great, but it was just because it was outdoors, it doesn't really help. And there was the guitarist wasn't there. It was just a backing track. It was just like, oh, this still isn't what I want to see. And like you said, Ella, it was still like just an electronic thing. Are you drawing dicks on your paper again?
No, it's a snake.
Drawing on
what's
your fucking
you?
Thing.
I'm allowed to draw while you talk. It helps me think
about snakes. Apparently, yeah, it's a weird one. Like I think we all agree, like Luke said, that the albums are great and musically they're brilliant. But it's kind of time if they're going to be a legitimate deal for metal moving forwards, it's time for them to, I don't know, get on with it and just
the show was
put
great.
Out a great album and just do a solid good world tour where they get everywhere and they play good shows and there's no fucking around and people getting arrested or because it doesn't feel like oh this exciting combustible band, it's just kind of like oh come on.
Yeah,
the show was great at the Underworld, but yeah, just the missing member thing really put a dampener on it, because the fans who were there, because it's 500 cap, were really committed and really devoted and really into it. And I don't think they've got any bad songs. Like, there's a couple of dodgy lyrics, not going to lie. The one about putting his hands down someone's pants and things like that. I'm a bit like, it's not a great song. But they haven't really got any good songs. It's just kind of really bad songs. They're all really catchy. They all hit really hard. And so whenever they play the song, you're like, oh, it's this song. This is a really good song. And then, it was just let down by the lack of members.
Damn. Oh, well. Speaking of members... What's the update on Gavelotech? There's news.
Yes, after last week we said there's no vocalist and they're going to announce it. They've announced it. Yeah. Who saw that coming?
That's exciting.
It is exciting.
So tell us about Ivar Nikolasin.
Well, yes, Ivar Nikolasin.
Which I'm sure I've said wrong.
Definitely pronounced it wrong. Well, he apparently, he might still be in The Good, The Bad and The Ugly, who are another Norwegian punk band who do sound a bit like Gavelotech at times in their more punk and roll type thing. They're probably a bit more straight up hardcore band than Gavelotech are. But yeah, I think he also contributed. Let me have a look. I've got some words here and I've lost it. Yeah, he was a guest vocalist on their song Blodtorst, blatantly not pronounced like that. And he's been touring with them for years and he's friends with the band. And he seems to be, I don't really know him that well, but he seems to be quite a mainstay in the Norwegian punk scene. And probably he's a really good fit.
Did you see the videos of him playing?
No, I haven't seen
him. He looked really on it. Looked like he had a point to prove. He was like in the crowd, on top of the crowd, climbing up stuff,
brilliant.
Going wild, which is great.
I think that's something they need, because they are, you know, obviously the latest album was a bit more classic rocking and stuff, and people, some of them didn't like that. But Erland, he was good as a frontman. He was great. He looked quite ominous. He was a big guy with his top off and an owl on his head. But I never saw him go full on like into the crowd and go fucking insane. And if that's what they're going to start doing now and being just like an old school punk band playing Gavelotech songs, then fine.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm in on that. But he says, Nikolasin has said that he's been a huge fan of Gavelotech for the past 10 years and he's not going to try and copy Erland. He says, Erland is a lion, I'm just a small rat. But this rat is pissed off, infectious, and full of pestilence.
That's the best quote ever.
That's a death metal lyric.
Yeah.
That's so good.
Good grief.
I hope they write a song about that.
But yeah, we all kind of said it last week, but it would be so, so good to see Gavelotech come swinging back to the very forefront of the metal scene. Because the metal scene is an exciting place right now, and I still think there's a place for Gavelotech to be right at the top of it.
So. Yeah, there's so many bands that still not sound like them, you can tell are fans of them in the way they're playing.
Definitely.
And I reckon they'll probably, because they've got a new singer now, they'll probably try and get a record out before the end of the year.
I hope so, man. I'm ready for it. Bring it on. One thing that's been a hot topic on the internet this week, Mr. Matthew Tuck has had some thoughts on the state of metal in 2018.
This
is actually taken from Elle's interview with him last month. So Matt from Bullet for My Valentine has put the cat amongst the pigeons by suggesting that
metal has gone stale, and that's part of the reason that Bullet have kind of veered towards a more kind of alt rock sound on Gravity. Al, you did the interview.
I did.
I mean, we published it. It was all published within context and stuff.
Yeah,
we haven't taken his words out of context or anything like that. But I mean, what do you think? Where do you think his head's at in why he's kind of feeling like that about the metal scene right now?
Well, he kind of said that he'll always have a love for the metal scene because they came up in the metal scene and that's where his roots are. And, you know, he loves the legends of metal. But I think for him personally, being in Bullet for My Valentine, he felt like they'd already done everything they wanted to do within metal as such. And with this record, he actually went and did some co-writing sessions with other songwriters. He went out on his own without the rest of the band, tried to look for a new way to write songs and a new way to present Bullet for My Valentine material. And I think after doing that and exploring that with various different co-writers and looking at various different new electronic techniques and so on, he obviously decided to take this record in that kind of direction. So I think it's like, you know, a big part of it was that he felt really uninspired by it and he felt bored by it. And obviously his comment that metal is becoming stale, that's caused a lot of people to take offence because they're not bored with what they see around them. You know, Matt's obviously thinking, I need a different approach for Bullet. I feel like I'm in a bit of a rut kind of thing. Whereas other people, obviously, we're here today. You know, there's still a lot of amazing bands right now doing amazing things.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people could say, oh, you're metal hammer, it's your job's to say metal's not stale. But I don't think anyone would really argue that where metal's at, and certainly heavy music in general is at in terms of producing exciting young bands, where it's at now is, I think, the most exciting place it's been for at least a couple of years, if not five or six or maybe even longer years. You know, every week it seems like we're talking about Code Orange or Venom Prison or Power Trip or Employed to Serve or Vane or like all these wicked bands that are just flooding the scene at the moment. So I think it's quite understandable why a lot of people have turned around and gone, that's daft to say that metal's gone stale. I don't think that anyone who's really listening to metal at its grassroots can seriously say it's going stale, because there's amazing things happening in pretty much every pocket of the scene I can think of at the moment. So yeah, that's not true.
No.
at the same time, when it comes to Bullet, I mean, it's kind of like what happened with Bring Me the Horizon in a way. Like, they spent 10 years, or the better part of, being ruthlessly the whipping boys for metal. You know, couldn't put out a half a song without getting floods of people steaming in going, this isn't metal, you're crap, blah, 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 blah. And so if he feels like it's time for Bullet to kind of shrug that off, I can't say I blame him, really.
Well, I think that's what it is. I mean,
if it's about Bullet.
The full quote was, I'm never going to turn my back on metal because it's been my life for 20-odd years. But for me as a songwriter in the genre, it's all gone a bit stale. So he's kind of saying, like, look, I've been doing the same thing for however many years with Bullet. I want to do something that's not the same. It's him, isn't it? It's a personal thing where he feels bored with it.
It's interesting as well that he's saying this after Temper kind of took a bit of a risk with writing these kind of up-tempo kind of fun songs, I guess you could say, like Riot and all that stuff, and that didn't go down so well. And so then they came back with Venom, which is a really solid album that was just, yeah, we're metal again, we're metal.
Yeah, exactly.
It's almost like they kind of got another panning from the metal world, kind of came back with Venom and went, right, we'll get this out of our system then. Look, we can still do a metal album if we want to.
That's the thing.
And now they've turned around and gone, well, we've done that now. We've proven that we can do that if we want to. Now we're going to go and do something else. And I guess whether people go with them will just depend on what people want from Bullet for My Valentine in 2018.
That's the thing. He didn't want to do another Venom. He was like, I've already been there and done that, and that's that record. And I think because he's had a lot of changes personal life as well, not only did he feel like he didn't want to make the same record, he probably felt like it was a different person. So you can understand personally where it's coming from. It's up his personal decision. But in terms of the metal scene as a whole, I think we can all definitely say that metal has not gone stale for us and for the scene.
Like, I mean, if you can't find something to like in heavy music, you're never looking hard enough. But right now, especially, it's just like, it's a fun battle working out which young bands we put into the issue every month, because you've only got so many pages and all the rest of it. So yeah. Metal's fine, and Bullet will do. Bullet will do what they do. It'll be really interesting to see if this approach is going to see them
go massive or not, because I think the whole, let me rephrase that, get even bigger stateside, because I think the whole thing with working with songwriters and thinking very carefully about the type of music you put out, often with a mind to streaming and US radio and stuff like that, goes one of two ways for bands, and it either doesn't work out for them because they've played it a bit too cynically, or it makes them fucking massive because they've hit the jackpot. And Bullet do know how to write a chorus, so you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think it's a daft thing to say, and I get it if you're going to move away from metal because you don't feel connected to it anymore and you don't want to play this anymore because you've done it for the past whatever it is, six albums or whatever they've done, but just calling it the entire scene stale just seems a bit, like I say, you're not looking hard enough.
He said, for me personally, you're allowed to be bored with something, you know, if you have been immersed in something for years and years and years and then you feel fed up. You know, again, I think if you like heavy music, there's always going to be a different type of heavy music, so hopefully you will never get bored of that kind of
music.
Feel of a kind of music, there's always different bands to discover and different people doing different things with sound. But you know, if somebody feels bored with something, it's natural to kind of try something moving on. And I'm just curious as to whether he will go back to quote unquote metal after this, you know, whether it'll be enough of a break that he'll return to it, or whether there'll be enough of a reaction that he'll return to it, or it'll just feel differently, who knows.
Absolutely, we will see what happens. What's been happening on
Facebook? Oh, come on.
Fuck it.
It's alright, it's very hot, forgive me.
It is hot. www.facebook.com/MeltHammerReaders is where you can come and ask us questions for this very podcast and talk to us about the magazine. We're always getting feedback, chatting to you guys about Melt Hammer in general, where you want to be. What people have been asking us this week. I'm so hot, I can't. I'm standing here with my hands in the air because I'm trying not to sweat.
Well, Merlin. Oof. Michael Guy Perry asks, which bands currently receiving a lot of attention do you just not get the hype around? Personally, I have tried with them, but I just don't see what the fuss around Creeper is all about.
Well, firstly, I think Creeper are great. I think Creeper's a funny one. I can definitely see why loads of people wouldn't like Creeper, because they're a very specific niche of rock music. It's that post AFI, My Chemical Romance. We're a cult band who like gothy pop, not pop punk, but gothy punk kind of music thing. But I think,
as a staunch metalhead, you're probably not going to be bothered.
No, definitely not. But I look at Creeper and I find it hard to see anyone going, I don't understand why people like this band, because they've got such a strong identity and the rest of it. In terms of bands getting hyped up, I don't know really. I just sat and named a ton of young bands we're excited about, and I stand for all of them. Come on.
I'm sure there's some stuff you like, Luke, that I don't like.
But there's not many of them are getting a lot of hype, I guess. Like, I'm trying to think what I've been listening to lately that, you know, are on the hype train. I just don't know. Like, generally speaking, it doesn't seem to be metal bands, because I understand why people like them. Like you mentioned Bullet for Valentine or whatever. Maybe not because they're already massive, but I don't like them particularly, but I get why people do.
Yeah.
Same with even not metal bands, like fucking 21 Pilots or something. I get why they're massive.
Yeah.
But it's not my thing.
Although
they
are
my thing.
Rubbish.
That's probably one I don't get, actually. I mean, like, yeah, they've got an image and they've got hooks, and so I can sort of see it to an extent, but I think they're the first band that have made me feel really super, super old. When I went to see them at Reading last year, maybe, could barely get in the tent, and just two people making the most weak-sounding music and everyone going nuts for it, and I was just like, I don't get why this is good.
I mean, if we're going into those bands on that side of the scene, then Royal Blood is one where I don't get it, where anyone... It's hard to say this, so I sound like a snidey twat, but anyone who actually listens to genuinely heavy riffy music, like if you're genuinely a big fan of Mastodon or even Queens of the Stone Age, I don't understand how you can listen to Royal Blood and think, wow, this is wicked, because it's so diluted from what that kind of music can be. I know you can, you know, I like The Prodigy, I also like Avicii, do you know what I mean? So I get it, you can have different scales of stuff, but I just think when it's that, I just don't. If you're educated enough to know what genuinely great riff heavy music is like, I don't get why you'd listen to Royal Blood. I find them so boring.
Yeah,
no personality or anything.
Because their music gets used a lot on TV and stuff. often it's one of those bands where you find yourself absorbing them, and then you'll be in a bar at someone's house or something, and a song will come on and be like, oh, I like this song, and then it'll take you a few seconds to go, oh, hang on, yeah, that's Royal Blood, but it's just kind of gone into your mind that you're actually actively liking it. Gone in.
One band that I really wish that I really loved, because I think the hype is completely justified, but I've just never quite been into them musically, at Enter Shikari.
I love them.
And a lot of people think I'm automatically going to like them because they're, you know, a bit heavy, a bit dancey, so I like a lot of that stuff. But I love everything they do. And I like, funnily enough, I do like it when they go a bit more dancey with their music. I think it really suits them. And the live show is always fucking wicked. But I just not, musically, it's not quite for me. And it annoys me because I love what they stand for, I love what they do. I know it sounds odd to say I want to be in this band, into this band.
Yeah,
but I'm not,
yeah.
But I don't quite click with their music enough. But I think objectively, it's not really being objective, but they're a brilliant band. They're one of the best UK bands to come through in years.
I loved them from the beginning. I just felt really excited to hear them because they're such an exciting band. The music's so exciting, and live they're just so exciting. You just can't.
So exciting again?
No. Excitement constrain me.
Sorry. Jeremy asks, how do you feel about multiple instrumental tracks on a single album? He's actually picked out the one I was going to say. It's awesome! I.e. an album that has an intro as well as 2-3 instrumentals on a 10 or 12 track album. Are bands using instrumentals as filler now instead of doing full songs? I.e. Ghost, Zillinada, etc.
No,
so
not.
Can you have too many instrumental tracks? Are people just being lazy by putting them on?
I think everyone's doing it for the show, aren't they? Like, Ghost are doing it for the show. They're doing it for that whole, like, atmosphere thing. So they've got a little interlude they can drop in when they're doing changes on the stage or intros and outros. And I think with the new Bury Tomorrow record as well, they actively said to us, we've written these instrumental bits
Bury Tomorrow,
it. And it's the same thing. They wrote it for the stage. They wrote it so they can perform it. And Zillinada as well, I guess it's a similar kind of thing. They've got this show with all this ambience and atmosphere, and it adds something to it. So
also, the first Zeal album had instrumentals on as well. I kind of think if right from the start you're doing that, like with Zillinada, I take that as granted, that's part of his music. He does little instrumental interludes and stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not like he suddenly started doing them. It's like, hey, where's this come from?
I think it does give the record a bit of cohesion if you've got some kind of sonic thread running all the way through it, and it makes it really interesting and atmospheric to listen to. And then when they perform it live, they're able to use those little techniques, so I personally quite like it. It doesn't bother me.
I mean, to me, the be-all and end-all is Jeremy named Ghost, and Miasma is, I'm not just saying this because, like, oh, Banto, there's the saxophone in it. It's literally my favourite song of 2018.
You love saxophone.
I think it is unbelievable. It's a mini epic in one song, and the way the saxophone comes in, like the, it's just, oh my god, it's amazing.
So, and
I think it works.
I get what he means as why it's annoying, though, especially if, like you said, a 10 to 12 track album that has an intro as well as a load of instrumentals, you are basically only getting 7
true
songs.
But it just depends on if it's good or not.
That's the thing, it depends, like Eleanor said, if it's the plan is to perform that album in its entirety and tell a story and make it an actual piece of art than just filling in time, then it makes complete sense. But like you say, if it is just like, oh fuck, we've only written 25 minutes of songs, let's fill in some time. But which we've, I don't think any of the bands we've named do that. I think Bury Tomorrow, Zillinada, Ghost, it all contributes to the whole. But
what do you think of people doing an intro track and naming it as a separate track on the album, but it's basically just an intro for one song, like Judas Priest with The Hellion and Electric Eye? Like, they're two separate songs, but one always leads into the other when they play it live.
Well, Slipknot have done that forever, and I've quite liked that.
And Tool did it in the middle of Lazarus with Parable and Parabola.
Yes, very true.
That is, like, literally one of my favourite things in the world in music ever. Like, the way that it builds into that, and then the riff comes in, it's literally like, there's nothing better than that, is there?
So I guess if it's done well. We haven't really picked out a version where it's not done well.
Not really, no.
I'm sure there are some new metal albums, I can't remember which bands, where people just kind of pissed around and swore.
Chocolate
and stuff.
Starfish, the outro, where it's just
that's got a bit of
wanking on for ages.
But when you stack the first half with that many songs,
But yeah, I'm thinking of those bits in the studio where people mess around and they just decide to shove it on the record for no reason. And it's a good in-joke, but you're like, no, this is boring now.
On the other side of that, I forgot the name of it, but the instrumental on Hybrid Theory, which basically sounds like an Aphex Twin track.
Oh, I love that.
It's amazing.
I love that.
So good. Love it, love it. So yeah, if it's done well, do it.
Yeah, so like I say, as long as it means something to the album or the live show, otherwise just No, suck it off.
Suck it off.
Chris Lloyd asks, what are your favourite misheard lyrics? My ex thought Manowar Hail and Kill was, hey, it's Phil.
What? Sorry? Really?
Hey,
it's Phil. Why not? The only ones that come to mind for me are, I mean, Jimi Hendrix kissed this guy. But mine aren't that well known. There's a song by In Flames off Conclarity called Crawl Through Knives. And the chorus goes, it's in my hands, this guy. So the lyric is, it's in my hands. But when Anders screams it, it really sounds like he's saying, it's in my ass. Like, really badly. Really, really badly.
That's just where your mind goes, though, isn't it?
It's just
more reflective of your mind.
What's the AFI song of... I'm looking it up because I'm failing at AFI fandom.
Brilliant.
Taking away your goth card.
Oh, the song's called... Oh, no, it's not.
Not really goth. They're just dark.
Yeah, true. Dancing Through Sunday, I think it is.
There we go.
The fast one of Sing the Right. I think it's that one. And the chorus, it goes, I'm in there to misery. And I can't remember what the actual lyric is now, but for years I couldn't get it out of my head that it was going, Elena Bum, Elena Bum, I'm in there to
misery. I actually misheard all lyrics. I'm really terrible. I have a problem with hearing things. Clearly.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah. I'm really bad. I misheard stuff all the time. I like to kind of like look at the lyrics to sort of work them out, because sometimes otherwise it can take a couple of years and you're like, oh, it's been wrong in my head the whole time.
Yeah,
sometimes I don't notice that I don't know the lyrics until I'm watching it live and singing along, and I'm like, what the fuck am I saying? This is like gibberish.
Happens to me all the time,
and it doesn't make sense. Like, for the only one I can think of though that isn't, I know, maybe two, that isn't funny, it's just something I thought it was for years. And in my head it made sense. Was it Champagne Supernova by Oasis?
Yeah.
What's the chorus? Hang on. Somewhere You Will Find Me, Caught Beneath the Landslide.
Yeah.
I thought it was Can't Believe the Last Line. And it was some and it was some like meta reference to the line he just sung. And I was like, yeah, maybe you won't find him. And I was in my head, I was like, this makes sense. But it doesn't. And the
To be honest, if you try and dig too far into Oasis lyrics, they come unravelled pretty quickly.
Yeah. I know, but I fucking love that song. And for years, I was like, this is so deep and poetic. I was like, oh, it sort of is still, but my version was better.
I think there are quite a lot of Slipknot ones people have misheard as well. What was it? Inside Michelle, I Wait and Bleed. A lot of people heard that as Inside Michelle, I Wait and Bleed.
Inside Michelle.
Yeah, which is really bleak.
Yeah, that's horrible. Well, people actually thought that was the lyric.
Yeah, I remember that at the time. Bullshit. There was like a lot of fucking misheard hell. Things. Did you know there's a word for a misheard lyric?
No.
Oh, it's a...
Yeah, that's
homonym,
the word.
Is it? Is that homonym?
Nope.
Oh.
It's a Mondegreen.
Wow. That's a Pokemon.
No, it's not.
Go Mondegreen.
What is it, Mormon?
What's your lyric? I just thought of one as well. You know Call On Me by Eric Fritz? Call on me, call on me.
Yeah.
It always sounds like the middle bit is going, and I don't know what the actual lyric is. Saving for a new city. I don't know what the actual lyric is. I've never looked it up. So there you go. I hope he bought it. Bless him. He deserves it. He's number one.
It's so hot in here.
It's so hot in here. So we're sounding a bit like all over the place. We're trying to avoid flapping at each other because it's so fucking hot.
That, we've not put the aircon on because it just makes it sound awful in
Stop
here.
Stop whinging.
He is a metal. Warm. It's the hottest podcast ever. That's what we're going to call it.
Come on, guys. Focus on the metal.
Right. The next question comes from Callum Reed, who says, has there ever been a band you've championed but look back now and think, what was I thinking? And on the other side of the coin, has there been a band you've scoffed at when you first saw or heard them but now really like? Someone below this comment, Merlin, mentioned you and said, apparently you were a big fan of a band called, if I've never heard of, Stuka Squadron. Or Stuker Squadron, apparently. You were a fan of them.
I don't know who it is.
Apparently you used to rave about them.
Stuker Squadron?
I've never heard of them.
I think that might have been Steve on the old podcast. I can't remember if that was me or not.
Well, it's now tied to your name forever and ever.
Why? What's wrong with them?
I don't know. I've never heard of them. That's what I mean. I think his point was, you liked them and look where they are now. You idiot.
What does that mean?
Don't know.
You championed a shit band.
Hold on a minute. As if it's been championing a... I mean, that does ring a bell, actually, Stuka Squadron, but I don't think there's a band I really would have planted the flag in too hard, because I definitely haven't listened to them for a long time. but there are certainly bands that I've really backed
in the magazine, on the old podcast or whatever, that didn't really make it as big as I'd hoped. But that's not the same as regretting backing them.
No.
You know, like, we've talked about bands like Crossfaith, Upon a Bed of Bodies, another one that never went as far as I hoped they would. But the records which we were big on them on still slammed. It's weird because he says that they're bands you champion, but now look back and think they are crap. And vice versa. There's one that's kind of fallen in the middle of that, which is Issues.
Mm.
When they first broke, anyone that listens to the original Wet Hour podcast will remember this. That first EP, Black Diamond, I think it was called, I was all over that. I still think now it's one of the coolest EPs that's come out in years. I loved that weird middle ground they found between kind of like 90s R&B and like metalcore. But then where they kind of went after that was, for me, just really boring. And they just became this kind of really middling sceney band. Tyler, the singer, is still a fucking great singer. He's got an amazing voice. But I just think musically, they just... it just went really
understand. Like, it was a summer when that EP was out, and it was like my guilty pleasure. I don't really have guilty pleasure, so I guess it wasn't, but you know, if I mentioned it to anyone, everyone was like, ugh, why are you listening to that? But it was really catchy, super catchy, and like really good for summer and stuff.
Yeah, but I don't regret backing that, because it was exciting, and it was, you know, I went to see them live at the time, and you could tell that they were already getting a massive fan base behind them. And I don't feel like they've really gone super big over here, but I was certainly into it at the time. Can't think of any bands. Actually, I do remember when Blood from the Dance Floor first came out and we kind of covered them.
Why?
That one, the video looks like a kind of acid trip version of Ghost in the Fog.
Fucking no.
I did remember at the time being like, actually, this is quite a good song, and there could be something in this band if they actually wrote decent tunes, and that didn't happen, did it?
Yeah, then they just did.
They kept being awful. Objectively terrible.
There was a band that was championed that I then bought the record of on the strength of the championing and was deeply disappointed. That band was Dislocated Styles. Do you remember them?
No.
They were.
Who was hyping them?
Music magazines. So it was at the time of, you know, Linkin Park, Papa Roach, Limp Bizkit, when new metal really, really went mainstream in the UK, and I was trying to buy every new metal album that I could find, or tape it from someone, or copy it on the CD or whatever. And this band, Dislocated Styles, were hyped as the next big rap metal-y type thing, and they did this album called Pin the Tail on the Honky, and it was...
That's so shit.
I mean, that should have been the first thing, but, you know, I was naive and young. And I think I had, like, you know, 20 quid to spend at HMV or something. It was a time when you had to buy a record and it was, like, £15 for the CD. And I didn't have very much money. And I chose to spend this money on the Dislocated Styles album, took it home, and it was so bad. I barely ever listened to it again. I remember at the time, like, trying to listen to it a lot to get myself to like it, except like I've spent my money on this, but it's really bad. So if you want to listen to that, Dislocated Styles, Pin the Tail Honky.
Or do the worst album Ellen has ever heard.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any band that I scoffed at and are now a big fan of. There's bands that I don't get straight away. I remember the first time I heard Partway, someone played Partway Driver, and we're going, oh, it's alright, it's metalcore.
I think that was a justified reaction, though, because at the beginning, I think that's what they were, really. It's just metalcore.
Yeah.
It's only really in the last few years they've got more of an identity.
That's the thing, I got into them quite a bit, you know, not long after. Like, Deep Blue was great, Alice was great, and it was, you know, I'm, you know, a big fan of that band, but I think there's just a lot of bands, because especially in things like metalcore, quite often your brain just sort of tunes out and goes, oh, I think I've heard this before.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, when you actually realised it, yeah, it's the greatest thing ever. There's something there, but there's not a lot that I feel like I've championed and now no longer stand by. There's albums that have been in my end of year lists that I now no longer listen to, I think, over the past few years, because I've sort of gone, oh, that was great, and now I've just got bored of it.
Because you've changed as a person.
I've changed as a person, man. But yeah, there's nothing that I'm ashamed of listening to.
I've just been researching Stuka Squadron.
like 10 minutes.
And they look like you'd like them, Al. They look like some kind of steampunk band.
Go on, let me have a look at the picture.
I'm getting flashbacks. But the thing is, it looks like they released an album in 2011 and then kind of broke up. So I don't know when I would have been banging on about them. But that's them. I mean, maybe I reviewed them or I just went.
It's pretty cheesy.
It's quite unlike me. I've got quite a nerdy brain for this kind of stuff. It's quite unlike me to not remember.
Someone on their Facebook group says you were championing them.
Well, I'll go listen to them again and see if I can remember. Andy Smith asks, how overrated do you think cheese is? What kind of a question is that?
Not overrated at all, Andy.
You're overrated.
I am trying to.
Your face is overrated.
I am trying to cut down cheese for the old.
I don't know what it looks
like.
Be
nice
to
the environment and animals vibe. So I'm not eating as much cheese as I did, but
I
love cheese. It does taste lovely.
Yeah. I'm probably one of the biggest cheese consumers on the team then.
Big up to cheese and Stuka Squadron.
Yeah, the stronger the better. Yeah.
Oh no, I'm not in on that. I like the more middly ones.
I know.
What's your favourite cheese, Luke?
Ooh.
I guess Wednesday there with cranberries.
Oh, that's good.
Oh yeah, Christmas especially.
I had a massive cheese and pineapple there recently. That's fucking brilliant.
Wednesday there with cranberries is probably my second favourite cheese. I think my first favourite cheese is baked camembert with bread dipped into it.
Yeah, that's fucking great.
That is a classic. That weirdly brings this week's podcast to a close. I am off to Canada this weekend.
Wow.
I am going to Heavy Montreal, which I went to a couple of years back. It was one of the best festivals I've ever been to. Took a year off and now it's back. I'm going to be watching the likes of Rob Zombie, Marilyn Manson, Gojira, Emperor, Limp Bizkit just got confirmed.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a stacked lineup, so I'll be reporting from that next week. And I'm going to see AFI on Friday as well, because they're playing Montreal.
AF Friday?
It doesn't work. So I'll be back next
week.
If you
said that, you would have loved it.
Probably.
That's so cold.
It's your own word.
Don't forget to, you're listening to the podcast now. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Acast and leave us a review as well. The more reviews and ratings we get, the higher up the ranks we go. I'll see you guys next week.
Are you going to bring sweets back?
If they're not all melted in my hand luggage by the time I get back here, then yeah.
That sounds like an excuse, doesn't it, Luke?
It does, yeah.
It's toasty. I'm hot. We're going to get ice creams. See you later, everybody.
Bye.
Don't forget to buy those Maiden bundles. They will fly.